by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my dab in the middle of it.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off with a John Bound commentary about Google being the largest business in the world, over $1 trillion plus. So here we go with John Bound, and we're going to follow that with Greg Reese about Building 7. So here we go with John Bound.
Google, which is owned by Alphabet Incorporated, is worth roughly $1.7 trillion.
I consider myself as an entrepreneur, one of the greatest entrepreneurs of our times. Sergey Brin, who is, as you know, the co-founder and president of Alphabet.
A number that rivals the GDP of some first world nations. This Goliath recently decided that the First Amendment no longer applies to U.S. citizens.
Think of this as a search engine for your fact checks that can help you determine fact from fiction. To add claim review markup, you'll need to provide the following information: the URL of the article, the name of the organization that conducted the fact check. Once you've provided this information, you can click Create to add the markup to the article. Google will then crawl the article and add the markup to its database.
While others in Silicon Valley, tied to the World Economic Forum and the United Nations, continue to build a Trojan horse of neo-feudalism.
Reducing that hateful content from being seen is one of the best examples how X is committed to encouraging healthy behavior online.
Internet censorship has grown since the Obama administration to be an unregulated wild beast.
Who needs free speech as long as the economy is going good? Social media, once seen as a mechanism to promote knowledge and understanding and solidarity, has proved to be just as effective promoting hatred and paranoia and propaganda and conspiracy theories.
Fast forward to 2023, and the barely acknowledged federal lawsuit, Missouri versus Biden, is revealing a cancerous censorship network that grew between big tech, U.S. intelligence agencies, and the Biden administration, while given cover by a mockingbird media that violently drowned the First Amendment in favor of a level of totalitarianism that directly threatens national security.
The only pandemic we have is among the unvaccinated. And they're killing people.
Judge Terry Doty calling the Biden administration's efforts a massive attack against free speech and targeted suppression of conservative ideas. The decision means top White House officials and several federal agencies, including the FBI and the Department of Justice, cannot communicate with social media companies for the purpose of urging, encouraging, pressuring, or inducing in any manner the removal, deletion, suppression, or reduction of content containing protected free speech.
Had a big couple of weeks here, Stuart, with uncovering really a vast censorship enterprise. At least 45 folks from the Biden administration were in constant communication with these social media platforms to censor and suppress speech. Had weekly calls on censorship calls. These social media platforms were changing their terms of service to deplatform folks. And then in addition to that, you had literally a high-ranking Facebook official texting the Surgeon General of the United States saying, hey, we did what you asked. What more can we do?
As the New York Post reported, So far, 67 officials or agencies, including the FBI, have been accused in the lawsuit of violating the First Amendment by pressuring Facebook, Twitter, and Google to censor users for alleged misinformation or disinformation. The problem is the mis and disinformation proved to be true.
Right. Who makes the decision of what's disinformation, what's truthful, and what's not? I mean, after all, we saw a Russia hoax for years, and that turned out not to be true. We saw the doctors in front of the Supreme Court building talking about potential other treatments, and those videos were all taken down. Now we know that those treatments could have saved many lives.
Unhindered, the Department of Defense contracted a New York-based AI company to deploy software to target disinformation on social media in real time. Meanwhile, Google continues to interfere in U.S. elections, pioneer the forced entry of AI's deep mind into our personal lives, and replace the propagandist Mockingbird Media with AI journalists, while creating an online media ecosystem that will eliminate disinformation, aka independent journalism. However, Section 230 continues to shield big tech from a tsunami of lawsuits, as our bought and paid for do-nothing Congress allows Google to quickly replace them with a one-world government. John Bound reporting.
Well, what the report that was. John Bound and Greg Reese are putting out some very fine work. Next is Greg Reese's report on Building 7. And we're coming up on an anniversary of the, you know, World Trade Center, you know, whatever you want to call it. But here we go with Greg Reese.
It would take hours to go over all the evidence which proves that the attack on September 11th, 2001 was an inside job. And I suggest you look into it if you haven't already. But to simplify the situation, all you need to do is look at Building 7. What some people still don't realize is that there were three buildings that fell into their own footprint that day. Three buildings that fell at free fall speed, indistinguishable from controlled demolitions, because that's exactly what they were. As the towers came crashing down, we can see the signatures of a controlled demolition. The official story is that Building 7, known as 7 World Trade Center, caught fire as a result of debris from the Twin Towers, which somehow caused a critical internal column to break, causing a cascading failure and collapse. And if this nonsensical official narrative were true, it would make it the first and only steel skyscraper in the world to collapse from fires. The building's owner, Larry Silverstein, took control of the Twin Towers just weeks before 9/11 and had them insured to cover terrorist attacks. After Building 7 collapsed, Silverstein told the media that the decision was made to pull it, suggesting that the building was collapsed on purpose.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
This implies that they somehow rigged the explosives that afternoon while the building was still burning, which is ridiculous. And so the media dismissed his comments and changed their story. There were several witnesses who reported hearing and feeling the type of explosions one would expect from a controlled demolition.
You heard explosions, like boom. It's like a distinct sound.
Big explosion. Blew us back into the eighth floor.
Somebody grabbed my shoulder and I started running, and the shit's hitting the ground behind me. And the whole time you're hearing thoom, 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 thoom. So, I think I know an explosion when I hear it.
Do you know if it was an explosion or if it was a building collapse?
To me, it sounded like an explosion.
The explosions were captured on video.
You want to call your mother or something?
In fact, you were just told by police that you should move out of your apartment, Tatiana. You've got Carolina here. They advised us to leave because we had, oh my God.
First responders were told that the building was going to be blown up.
Keep your eye on that building. It's coming down.
The building is about to blow up. Move it back.
We are walking back. The building is about to blow up.
And you guys knew this was coming all day.
We had heard reports that the building was unstable and that eventually would either come down on its own or it would be taken down.
The BBC reported live on air that the building already collapsed before it did. Television viewers could see it in the background, still standing.
Ago, was talking about the Salomon Brothers building collapsing, and indeed it has. Apparently that's only a few hundred yards away from where the World Trade Center towers were, and it seems that this was not a result of a new attack. It was because the building had been weakened.
And the investigation never even investigated for explosives. The Republican White House then signed into law the Patriot Act, which allowed the next Democrat White House to target U.S. civilians as if they were domestic terrorists. And they amended the Defense Authorization Act, which allowed the next Republican White House to experiment on the American people with deadly gene therapy and nanotech vaccines. The same people who did 9/11 are pulling off the climate hoax and the deadly COVID shots. They run both parties of our government. Many have forgotten, and it's time to wake up before they kill us all. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Next, we're going to bring you up with some current politics. Sean Hannity had a really good... I'm putting together about 12 minutes of his program, which aired yesterday on Friday, September the 8th, I believe, 2023. But this is a good synopsis of what's going on currently, and then I'm going to follow up on that with Jonathan Turley's his view on the danger of the 14th Amendment. So here we go next with Sean Hannity and a hot 12-minute summary here and conclusion of several important issues.
Friday special edition of Hannity, Biden's leadership failures. Now we begin with a very simple question, and every American needs to ask this question. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? According to virtually every poll, every indicator, the answer is a resounding no. And Americans now clearly see who is at fault. From day one, Joe Biden has failed to lead on every major issue of our day. Ask yourself, can you name one major accomplishment? Now, some blame Biden's age and obvious cognitive decline. Others believe that Joe's not that bright. No, I tend to believe both, and he's in over his head. But at the very core of Biden's leadership failures is basically his character, or frankly, his lack thereof. Now, for decades, Biden's moral cowardice, poor judgment, went under the radar during, you know, easy Senate elections in deep blue Delaware, and during an 8-year stint riding Barack Obama's coattails as vice president. And in 2020, during a desperate bid to unseat Donald Trump, well, the media mob, big tech, countless government bureaucrats, FBI, well, meeting with big tech weekly, they all worked together to sweep Joe Biden's alleged corruption under the rug. But as a failing president, there is nowhere left for Biden now to hide. Look at this cover. Today's New York Post, 61% believe that your president, Joe Biden, was involved in Hunter Biden's business, something he swore that not once did he ever talk to his son, brother, or anybody for that matter about. Now, the Post is referencing a CNN poll, and the numbers get even worse among independents. 64% of this very important voting bloc believe that Joe Biden was involved in his son's shady business deals. You know, millions, tens of millions of dollars. China, Russia, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, Romania, Mexico, other countries. And out of everyone polled who believes Biden was involved with Hunter's businesses, yeah, 69% think that Joe Biden broke the law. Now, of course, everyone is innocent until proven guilty, but there is real evidence of bribery, corruption, tax fraud, FARA violations, and money laundering. That's why I call it the Joe Biden money laundering and bribery scandal allegations. You have pictures, you have texts, you have videos, you have emails, bank statements, eyewitness testimony, the FBI 1023 form, government whistleblowers, and so much more. And of course, when you're a top Democrat, well, none of that seems to matter, especially when it's your executive branch that has your Department of Justice and your FBI. And right now we have a politicized and weaponized DOJ. They went after former Virginia governor. We had him on this program, Bob McDonald. Remember, he took out a loan from a close personal friend, paid it back. They wanted to lock him up for years, but the Supreme Court unanimously, how rare is that? They overturned and vacated the guilty verdict. When it comes to Biden, well, they can rake in tens of millions of dollars from foreign countries, many adversarial countries, in exchange for access and favors, and then fail to pay taxes on it. But don't worry, the investigator will let the statute of limitations run out. And the DOJ simply doesn't even seem to care. But you, the American people, can see the obvious truth. Joe Biden is corrupt. He's dishonest. And it's not just the Biden family business. Biden lies and obfuscates nonstop, constantly. Look at the border. Oh, the border's secure. We've been told over and over again. He's done more to secure the border than anyone else before him. There's no crisis at the border, even though Democrats like Eric Adams in New York City, they're now freaking out, as are other towns and cities. You have America's sanctuary cities and states. They can't handle Joe's influx of illegal immigrants. In 3 years, the number may be as high as 8 million illegal immigrants aided and abetted by your president allowed into this country. Now, New York City just approved a massive housing complex for illegal immigrants in an abandoned building. In Chicago, O'Hare, the city's international airport, they're now being used as an illegal immigrant shelter. This is completely out of hand. We are certainly better than this, but apparently now Joe is attempting to quell any and all dissent from the left, not by securing the border, but trying to force illegal immigrants. We must now remain in Texas, not Mexico, Texas. Okay, one big problem. Illegal immigrants from all over the world are now pouring in from the northern border, Canada, in places, they're coming from places we never dreamed of. This is what failed leadership looks like. And under Joe Biden, it will not get better. We're going to have a lot more from Biden's leadership failures throughout the show tonight. But first, joining us now with reaction, Fox News' contributor Charlie Hurt, Fox and Friends Weekend co-host Pete Hegseth, and California Congressman Daryl Issa. Congressman Issa, let me start on the Biden family syndicate, or if you're from Fulton County, Georgia, we call it the Enterprise, the Biden Enterprise. I want to get into this. He swore to the American people, not once did he ever speak to his son, his brother, or anybody for that matter, about their foreign business deals. He lied. He met with some of Hunter's foreign business partners. He had conversations with and called in often, according to Devin Archer, with Hunter and his foreign business associates. Clearly, Hunter was spending money that he made in these ventures for his father. We have emails to prove that. So how come it's taken this long to even begin to get some criticism in the mainstream media and in Washington?
Well, Hannity, obviously the mainstream media has been defending this president for a long time, and they've run out of an ability to do it. About the time he changed his story, lawyered up, they began to turn on him ever so slightly. But there's a long way to go. We've gone from his thwarting our investigations as best he could to a situation in which we are now likely, very likely, to have a formal impeachment inquiry begin in a matter of days.
Okay, that inquiry, I think, is very critical. Pete Hegseth, I think there are two necessary steps moving forward. One is the impeachment inquiry. The second is they need to start subpoenaing Biden family members, starting with Hunter Biden himself. That's not happened. Remember, the FBI was supposed to interview Hunter, but that got stopped because they were tipped off. So I think Congress should fill that role. Thoughts?
Congress should fill that role. That should be part of the impeachment inquiry. Every single person with any bit of knowledge who is tied to this Biden crime family should be interviewed. I mean, the Bidens decided it was time to cash in when he was vice president, especially in his second term when he was passed over by Hillary Clinton. They never thought he'd run. So grift was the family business in Washington, D.C. Then they took another shot at it, and they're counting on a complicit press, which we've almost seen universal besides your show and this channel and a few others, willing to dig into all the smoke that's there. You could connect the dots with a crayon. Sean, at this point. And one mention on the border. On the border, this, it's a failure, no doubt. But when you look at this detail of keeping them in Texas, why would you keep them in Texas? Well, yes, you've got complaints of the blue state mayors, but maybe you've had a plan for a long time to turn Texas blue. Maybe you've wanted to turn it purple. And so if you're going to open the border, which is the plan, keep them there. And someone like Governor Abbott foiled that plan by saying, no, we're busing them out. We're sending them to your home state to make it your problem as well in your sanctuary state. So, yes, there's a lot of failure, but there's some intentionality there, too.
All right. Let me ask you, Charlie. Let me stay. We'll get to the border in a second. When you have a CNN poll showing that a majority of people know that Joe lied, believe he was involved with Hunter, and believe those deals were corrupt, that's a pretty significant number. But also add to that, you know, CNN anchors and pundits and hardcore Democrats like Van Jones, David Axelrod, now even James Carville, are very critical of the polling and of Biden's conduct. What is that? Is that a canary in the coal mine moment? Are they beginning to think about really seriously dumping him as their candidate?
I think it's absolutely a freak out moment for a lot of Democrats and people in the media who are supporting the Democrat Party and supporting Joe Biden and have supported Joe Biden all along, both in terms of covering up for him and, of course, also attacking his opponents, as we saw in the 2020 election. There's nothing they won't do in order to prop this family up, as Pete says, in order to enrich themselves, because this is all very intentional, and they've chosen that. And so, yeah, I do think that they're at a freakout moment, but the real problem for them is that, you know, they don't have any really good alternatives. And, yeah, you know, the idea of turning to somebody like Kamala Harris, who was installed as a backup, as sort of an insurance policy against the 25th Amendment for Joe Biden in the first place, because she was the only person in Washington less popular than Joe Biden. Now they have nowhere to turn. So what do you do? And I know there's a lot of talk out there about some of these governors, but I think that the problem is at this point, and you know, immigration is a perfect example of that. You know, when you get into the issues, it only goes downhill for Democrats, because the issues are even more painful for voters and taxpayers than the corruption of the Biden family.
All right. Congressman, let me go back to you. You have, you know, prominent liberal voices, Maureen Dowd, New York Times, Van Jones, Axelrod, Carville. I mentioned that. You're in the halls of Congress. Are Democrats, are they honest enough to admit to you the obvious, that Joe Biden is a cognitive mess? Are they saying that to you, or do they just act as though it's not happening, pretend as though he doesn't have these issues?
Well, for the most part, what they do is try to pivot from the obvious, which is that he's cognitively challenged, to, but his policies. And that's one of the challenges, Hannity, is remember, if at the last minute they get rid of Biden over corruption, that doesn't change the fact that the Biden's party now, the Obama-Biden party, is a radical left-wing party. So one of the challenges for Republicans, and let's stay focused on the fact, these policies are killing American innovation. They're killing our energy independence. They're killing the advantage we have that has allowed us to lead the world. So, yes, he's corrupt, and the inquiry is going to reveal more of that. But at the same time, these policies, some of them outside his constitutional authority, have to also be pushed back against, investigated, and stopped.
All right. You're from a liberal state. You're a sanctuary state, sanctuary city.
Yeah, I'll put that. I'll embed that that whole program so you'll be able to hear the whole program with Sean Hannity. But coming up next, Laura Ingraham interviewed Jonathan Turley about the danger of the 14th Amendment, and it is a danger. They're trying to say portions of the 14th Amendment about insurrection prohibit someone from running for office, and they're trying to apply that to Trump before he's ever convicted of any insurrection or whatever. So here we go with Jonathan Turley, interviewed by Laura Ingraham.
Warning, priggish prevaricator alert.
The 14th Amendment, Section 3, is pretty clear. It doesn't require that you be convicted of insurrection. It just requires that you have engaged in these acts. It's a disqualification from holding office again. And it fits Donald Trump to a T. By the clear terms of the 14th Amendment, he should be disqualified from holding office.
Told you they were going to pull out all the stops. And that means by any means necessary, you got to dump Trump, even if it means obliterating the actual words, the actual meaning of the U.S. Constitution. Now, remember, as I said in the angle, the Democrats know that their own base, it doesn't want Biden. They want another alternative to run. They see Biden's flagging poll numbers, but the party elites do not trust their own voters.
Under the 14th Amendment, he is not even allowed to run, even though he hasn't been convicted yet. Instead of concentrating so much about on the indictments, I mean, I'm very excited about them myself, but I definitely think 14th Amendment all the way and just prevent him from running.
Well, she is a renowned constitutional scholar. Joining me now is Jonathan Turley, professor of law at George Washington University and Fox News contributor. Professor, does getting left-leaning state attorneys general, as Adam Schiff was referring to, getting them involved here, does that give this wacky 14th Amendment strategy any more heft or credibility?
I don't think it does. You know, there are academics that have thought about this seriously and have supported this theory. I think that it's the most dangerous theory that has emerged in decades. I think it's entirely unsupported by the text and the history of the 14th Amendment. This provision was written after the Civil War, of an actual rebellion where hundreds of thousands of people died. There was an army on the other side. They had their own foreign policy. That's a rebellion. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be used for anything that isn't of that magnitude, but it is notable that Trump has not been charged even with incitement, let alone rebellion or insurrection. And yet they say that this doesn't even require an act of Congress, that any judge can simply announce that he was supporting an insurrection and that he is therefore disqualified and voters will not get the choice of whether to vote for him or not. That's what makes this so dangerous. I don't think this will withstand review. They could end up getting a couple of judges to go with them. But in the long run, I think it'll be rejected. That's why I'm eager for them to take it to court so we can finally put this on the road and see if they can take it off, you know, get this off the ground. I don't think it will.
I can imagine what Justice Alito and a few of the others would say about this. I mean, talk about anti-democratic. This is the ultimate anti-democratic move that you could think about. Like, it doesn't matter what the people want, whoever the nominee is. If they want Trump, if it wasn't Trump, you know, DeSantis would be, you know, they try to charge him with kidnapping the migrants and sending them to, you know, Massachusetts or, you know, California. I mean, you can see that this could go in a lot of different directions, none of them good.
No, I mean, this is a comforting tale to tell liberal children at night so they can sleep restfully. That, you know, Donald Trump will not be on the ballot, but he will be on the ballot. And the thing is, this thing was written after the vice president of the Confederacy showed up in Congress to retake his oath. And people were just a bit peeved about that because he had taken that oath before. Now, we can all have disagreement about what January 6th was. It was a horrible day. It was a desecration of our constitutional system. In my view, and in the view of it, apparently a majority of people polled, it was a protest that became a riot. I don't believe that it was technically an insurrection. But the question is, should we just have a system where any judge can just take a riot like that and say, well, in my view, it was an insurrection, and you aided and abetted it by not responding fast enough, by using rhetoric that was inflammatory? That is a very dangerous theory, and it would be replicated over and over again be accepted.
To that point, Jonathan, Arizona's Secretary of State let slip an important detail about the broader implications of this 14th Amendment strategy. Watch this.
Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is a radical and sweeping proposition. This isn't just about one person in one office. Mm-hmm. This is about everyone who's running for any office in the United States of America.
So look, if they can use this against Trump, what stops them from finding that someone else supported the resurrection, the insurrection that wasn't an insurrection? You know, so you could see where this would continue to leapfrog across other potential races.
That's right. And the ambiguity within this theory is quite maddening. You know, if Trump had asked people to come back an hour earlier, would that have been not an insurrection? If he had mentioned go there peacefully three more times, would that have made the difference? We need a bright line rule. After all, Representative Raskin and Democrats tried to stop the certification of Donald Trump in 2016 when there were violent riots in Washington, D.C. against his inauguration. They had no grounds for that. There were no grounds in earlier certification fights by Democrats. Does that mean that they were all engaged in some rebellion or insurrection? No, it doesn't. We have to have some type of bright line rule that guarantees that the voters can make decisions on these questions. I'm not saying that people cannot read this as an insurrection as opposed to a riot, but you have to ask yourself, is this what you want replicated for the future? I don't think it is.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of things that were happening after the killing of George Floyd that were really scary in the country, and chaos was breaking out. People could make all sorts of findings of fact about that in different circumstances as well. Professor, wonderful to see you. Thank you.
One thing that happened just recently, there's ongoing, the G20 is in New Delhi, India, but who does not show up but President Xi? China is not there. And so Gordon Chang was interviewed on this aspect of their not being there, and there's all kinds of tumultuous problems that China has right now, but they're trying to separate themselves out from this new world order. But here we go with Gordon Chang.
Let's bring in best-selling author and Gatestone Institute senior fellow Gordon Chang. Gordon, thanks for joining us. Your reaction to Xi not attending, is this more about the tensions with India, because that's where the summit's being held, but they have some tensions with India, as opposed to just not wanting to meet with President Biden or some other factor?
Yeah, almost every analyst has said that Xi Jinping is snubbing Narendra Modi, the Indian prime minister. And that's possible, but it also could be that Xi Jinping is not in travel mode, because just a couple hours ago, the Ministry of State Security, and obviously acting on behalf of Xi Jinping, threatened that the Chinese leader would not come to the United States for the APEC summit in November. And by the way, Xi Jinping is not right now in Jakarta at the ASEAN meeting, which he might have attended in different circumstances. So this very well may be Xi Jinping feeling he should not leave China at a particularly dangerous time for him internally, because we know he's under a lot of criticism from Communist Party elders.
That's interesting. Can you expand on that a little bit more, Gordon? I wasn't aware that he was so concerned that he would cancel his traveling and his summits because of that. Is it in your mind, is he in a dangerous period?
I think that he's at some risk. And I don't know if this is the reason for him not traveling, but we can see, for instance, that his policies are being criticized. So, for instance, in the August Beidaha summit, which the Chinese leaders hold each year, there are now reports coming out that Xi Jinping was subject to criticism for going too far in his policies. We've also heard some really interesting rumors about Qin Gang, the former foreign minister. People are now saying that he was not only sidelined, but he was executed. Now, I don't believe those rumors, but nonetheless, the fact that those rumors are now circulating in China, and the fact that they've been allowed to circulate, suggests that there are senior Communist Party leaders who want to undermine Xi Jinping. We know the problems that the country is facing, especially the economy. We know Xi Jinping has been taking a lot of criticism for that. So you put two and two together and you can say, well, we don't know the reason for Xi not going to India, but it could very well be internal, not external.
Fascinating stuff. And quickly, while I have you, Gordon, this report that North Korea's Kim Jong-un reportedly planning to meet with Vladimir Putin for arms talks, a very strange, perhaps, meeting. What's your thought on that?
Well, we're seeing the congealing of the China-Russia-North Korea axis. They're all cooperating very closely. They actually may have joint naval drills. Putin has suggested adding North Korea to the joint Russia-China drills. And so this is actually should be no surprise, but we should be concerned because a lot of people in the U.S. say, oh, there's no new Cold War. Well, it really looks like one from this perspective.
It certainly does. Fascinating stuff, Gordon. I have to leave it there, but thank you so much for bringing us your expertise. We really do appreciate it, of course.
This world is dangerous, and China is threatening the security of all the countries in the world. But coming up next, we've got Alex talking about this mad scientist of DARPA. And he's talking about a really advanced techniques that they already instituted and are operational. And this is really, really scary stuff. But here we go with Alex about the Mad Scientist Program.
Welcome, my friends. Welcome. It's Friday, September 8, 2023. And we're not talking about conspiracy theories here today. We're not talking about theoretical things. We're not talking about things that are fiction or postulating possible futures. We're talking about what is known to be deployed, that is being rolled out right now against humanity. The information we've got, looking at just one Pentagon DARPA program, the Mad Scientist Program is what they call it. Not my term for them, but they've certainly named themselves properly. It is what it is. Just looking at one presenter here, and a bunch of his lectures we've watched last week, and then I've talked about some on my show, is mind-blowing. And it's because it's, again, not theoretical.
I can affect individuals' brain functions in a variety of different ways, both positively and negatively, by engaging or disengaging nodes and networks of the brain that therefore affect their cognitions, emotions, and ultimately their behaviors. Moreover, by understanding the way the brain works as nodes and networks and not as key sites that are doing any particular thing, I can also utilize various forms of electromagnetic radiation and energy to be able to disrupt brain function. The brain is an electromagnetic organ, and like any other electromagnetic substance, the integrity of those networks is reliant upon the electromagnetic pulses that flow in between them.
Please understand, everything he's talking about is already deployed against us. Talks about bugs with toxins or vaccines in them being released. What's Bill Gates doing? Everything he talks about is already here. And is it helping us? No. Our standard of living's down. Our life expectancy's down. We have the highest death rate ever recorded, 44% increase in year-to-year death over the previous years. We're being murdered. From the atrazine in the water to the fluoride in the water, it's really funny to these people. Because they're the mad scientists. They're the bosses. They're the big guys. They're in control, not you.
So what we're able to do here is infiltrate the brain space with nanoparticulate matter that aggregates in situ, on site in the brain. And there's one of two things. Either penetrates from the vascular space, gets in through the bloodstream, gets in through the nose, through the mucosa, or infiltrates the vascular space and clogs it. What is the result? What's called a nanoparticulate stroke or a hemorrhagic diathesis, fancy word, for it's a predisposition to individuals having brain bleeds.
And we know in 2017, the Pentagon was approached by the group they funded with their own project, EcoHealth Alliance, saying we want to release nanotech that does this in China as a, quote, test. And the Pentagon said that'll cause World War III. That's a bioweapon.
What we're looking at is the use of drones, for example, unmanned vehicles, aerial vehicles, ground vehicles, aquatic vehicles, to deliver payloads of various forms of neurological chemicals, neurological microbes, whether those be bacteria and or viruses, neurological toxins, to a variety of different populations that range from the individual to a fairly large aggregate of individuals utilizing multiple drones and or other forms of unmanned vehicles.
And he talks about the Australian group and the Italian group. It's all a global government in the Western world coordinating this, all funded by BlackRock, by the Rothschilds, by the Rockefeller Crime Syndicate. Now, I want to skip ahead from 13. We'll go back to that in a minute. Describes different ways a person could be targeted. Let's go to 14 because you look at that scar on his face. The minute I saw it, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just a pattern recognition person. Oh, but your program. Exactly. We must be trusting like a child being picked up in a white van to be taken to be raped and killed in a snuff film. Our teeth pulled out with pliers. Is that be trusting like a child? This is for the greater good. Okay. Let's go to DARPA N3 project. New project to invade the brain. How liberal is that? Non-surgically.
And things that are exceedingly indwelling and therefore highly invasive. Although the current move in the field is to make that level of invasiveness minimized so as to be able to introduce things into the brain space in ways that are minimally invasive and non-surgical, but nonetheless as potent. A case in point, I think one of the more exciting projects that I've had the opportunity to interface with is a current DARPA project called N-cubed or N3, which is next generation non-invasive neuromodulation. And again, this is not a high side project. Our listeners can go to www.darpa.mil and just look up N-cubed or N3. And it's a very interesting and I think in many ways highly provocative project because what it allows us to do is to utilize state-of-the-art engineering to be able to introduce vast arrays of sensors and transmitters into the living brain that make that brain and its functions accessible in real time remotely.
With all the stuff they're putting in the shots. Let's go to radical body modification.
And if you keep going, you then get radical modifications. You're now being able to do things that humans as a species simply don't do or can't do. Seeing in the infrared or ultraviolet range, mm-hmm. being able to hear ultrasonically.
Two men having a baby.
A variety of other performance metrics.
Easter bunnies.
Abilities. Humans as a species have not been able to do this. And it's not just a question of
that piece of equipment. That's not true. And I'm not going to get into details of it because the media will use it. But and he gets into that coming up about psychedelics. But, I mean, if you're on the right acid, you can be with 10 people with bats flying around a place in the desert, and you can see them firing their echolocation out like red laser beams out of their mouths. And you look at like five people and you go, what do you see those bats doing? I see them shooting red light out of their mouths. And you're like, yeah. But it's got to be LSD-25, which, again, they don't give the general public. And they all know this. And that was pre-90s. Everything was about human augmentations or chemicals. But what they found, they didn't like. I do want Mug Club members who are on Twitter, Instagram, Rumble, everywhere, to take clips out of the show and to share it because you're paying it forward. You're putting in the seed money to see the shows first, to see the full compendium of what's happening. But unlike Stephen's show where an hour of it's free and then you get, you know, an hour or more in Mug Club, here this is all subscription. So I think the bridge between that is all of you to realize I want you to, and so does Stephen, to take clips out of this and share it everywhere. That brings more people to subscribe. And then the essence of what we break down also gets out of the public. And then by doing this, we're going to launch a lot of other shows very, very soon. I do intend in the very near future to make the fourth hour of my daily show, which I started all this 15 years ago, having a later part of the show subscription, the live part, not subscription. We trailblazed a lot of that. We're going to go back to the fourth hour being subscription with special guests, breaking news, and more. And I would say that's only a month out or so for everybody that is a member at Mug Club. But the place to sign up at Mug Club is JonesCrowder.com, promo code Alex.
Boy, this is getting scary out here. I'm really concerned about the safety and security of this country on many levels. And I'm just really worried, very sick. I'm sick almost about with worrying about this. Well, we're going to end the program with Jay Dyer. And he's talking about the whole ensemble of power groups and individuals that have come together. H.G. Wells was early on one of the big foremost leaders in creating a new world order, a new world, very powerful block of companies, headed up by financials and military, industrial complexes, and so forth. But this is what Jay Dyer has become quite an expert in this area. And then we're going to finish with him, and I might make some commentary right at the end if we have time. But anyway, thank you for listening. If you don't hear back from me, here we go with Jay Dyer.
back to the Alex Jones Show. We're talking about the big picture plan of what the elite for at least a few centuries in the modern era have as their goal. And that is ultimately what was published by World Economic Forum luminary Noah Yuval Harari in his book Homo Deus. So for many, many years, of course, we've been talking about this and we've been explaining that this is the ultimate plan. Alex has talked about it right all the way back to Ray Kurzweil and Endgame and even before that, that the idea was that technology would allow man to evolve into being his own god. And there are older books that kind of presage this as well that were way ahead of their time. I remember some years ago I read H.G. Wells' Island of Dr. Moreau, which I'll be covering on my channel in the near future. We haven't looked at that in many, many years. And one of the theories that was way ahead of his time in that book was the plasticity of human nature. Now, there can be malleable plasticity elements to human nature, which are there, but we shouldn't conclude from that that therefore it's all plastic. We're all just Gumby people, and there's no actual metaphysical meaning or that there's no chromosomes, none of that, right? We're not just Gumby people. We have identity over time. There is such a thing as human nature. It does exist. But the premise of Dr. Moreau, if you don't know, is that there's this sort of mad science doctor who's got a God complex on an island, and he's experimenting and creating genetic hybrids, and he's creating these sort of, monstrosities. And so somebody's stuck on this island and they're trying to get off of it because it's kind of a microcosm of the world. You could say the island represents sort of the future dystopian world that could develop as a result of, DNA splicing and all that in the mind of H.G. Wells. I think he wrote that in 1896. So he was way ahead of his time in that regard as an insider of what the future plans were. Now, if we fast forward to today, Harari's book, and by the way, he's a historian, so he's not a scientist. The establishment's always interested in, do you have the credentials? He's not actually a scientist, so he's a historian, but this book was published in 2016, and the idea from the very beginning of the book is that there's not a meaning external to man. Man creates all of his own meaning. He doesn't discover meaning. He doesn't discover principles. He creates these things. And so the second chapter, for example, is that, the second section is that man gives meaning to the world. So we create our own meaning. Meaning is not something that we discover. We create our own meaning. And if we can create our own meaning, then we can create our own godhood eventually, right? That's the point of where the book goes, is that we are evolving beyond old stories of religion to a new humanity. He calls it a new human. What's the new human? The new human is the coming, no longer interested in religion human, but the religion of AI, or what he calls dataism. So the religion of the future, the religion that's an emerging deus ex machina right now is dataism. And the future will all be about pure raw data. That will be the new meaning. And again, meaning is not something that's a principle in the world. Purpose is not something in the world. Things don't have purpose. They don't have meaning. Everything is evolving, you see. So he's within this tradition of the same revolutionary philosophers that we were talking about, that everything is in evolutionary flux. Since everything's in flux, there's no stability. There's no fixity. It's either or. You either believe in everything being in stasis or everything's in flux and change. Well, if everything is flux and change, then the principle that everything is flux and change would also be subject to change. That's self-refuting. So obviously it's not true that everything is flux and change. That's a self-refuting statement. There's both fixity and change in the world. There's stasis and change. Both of those things are true. Objects have identity over time and they change. It can be a both and, not an either or. And a lot of bad philosophical mistakes are premised on false either ors. But also so is dialectical manipulation. It's premised on false either ors. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Well, wait a minute. What about a third option where both of you are wrong? What if I don't like neoconservatism or terrorism? No, I have to choose either. It's a false either. It's a very low-level manipulation, and that's a fallacy in logic. But you'll notice a lot of propaganda, a lot of government pronouncements, and, you know, old school Bush speeches. They operate on basic fallacies. But the fallacies are very useful in propaganda, you see. For example, appeals to emotion are used all the time in propaganda. Do you support the death of children? Do you support? Oh, you must support. So if you don't like the Iraq war, it's because you like Saddam throwing babies out of incubators. You see how low IQ and silly this is, but it works, right? That's very useful because most of the public doesn't operate in a critical thinking way. They operate, unfortunately, on an emotional basis. And so there's an emotional reaction to these propaganda, which most of the time they're fake news stories, right? Especially things that are intended to provoke war, right? The barbarian, for example, Tavistock got really sophisticated with this. Before it was Tavistock, it was called Wellington House. And the Bryce report wrote up all these stories about how the leader of Russia, of Germany, the Kaiser was the butcher. And they just called him the butcher, the beast and butcher. I think they called him the butcher of Baghdad. Or something akin to that, the butcher of whatever, the butcher of Germany. And then they used that butcher of Baghdad for Saddam. It was the exact same propaganda they used for the Kaiser. And it doesn't even matter if the stories are true. It's just in the media that, oh, he's the butcher of, yeah, we got to take down that Saddam because he's the butcher. But Saddam was trained by the CIA and put in this by the CIA, famously, well known. So the same people who can be established, set up by the system, by the West, can then be dispensed with and thrown away when they're no longer needed. And that's the unfortunate nature of dialectical manipulation in big geopolitics, but it's all playing out right now. We just see this with these fake, right, neo-Nazi groups. And that ultimately ties into the long-term picture, I would argue, because the people who are pushing Malthusianism, all the Great Reset crowd, the Davos crowd, Jane Goodall, all those types, Harari, all of those people pushing Great Reset are the same ones that have a face, a veneer of democracy, liberalism, concern. Oh, we care about the environment. We care about immigrants. No, they don't. They're the same people who want the population scaled down 90%. There's not an actual concern. That's all for PR. That's a cloak. And Alex has talked about the liberal cloak all the way back to what Obama deception, right? And yet it still fools all these people. People think that the left cares about humanity. No, the left is a Malthusian cult, a death cult in its inner core. And it controls a giant golem zombie mind control being, this entity of all these people that are in this Borg hive that believe they're just basically completely controlled androids, right? I put up a video that humans are becoming robots. I don't just mean androids in the sense of like, you know, technology and brain implants. Yeah, that's true. But people are already androids in the sense of being completely controlled by false narratives and completely worshiping the system. They're already in a cult. And so they're all the more going to be susceptible to accepting whatever comes down the pipe when we're told, as the NATO PSYOP document says, there will be pushed implants and chips. There will be nanotech type injections and so forth that will be pushed. The UK Ministry of Defense document that came out a few years ago, the document about transhumanism, it said that we will have to change global ethics through social engineering so that people no longer object to having nanotechnology and implementation of various forms of microchipping. It's not microchips in the classical sense anymore. It's more like nanotech. So that people accept that. So you have all of these white paper documents that are coming out. They're all public. They get declassified or they get released. And the NATO cognitive warfare document is a perfect example. It says the exact same thing as the UK Ministry of Defense transhumanist document. They say the exact same thing. We're going to have to not just change your mind, but change your genetics. And there we have Financial Times putting out an article saying, yes, of course the public is the target of psyops. Thank you for finally admitting what we were saying for so long. And by the way, if you don't like psyops, you're a bigot. It doesn't exist, but when it does exist, it's a great thing, and if you don't like it, you're a bigot. If you want to support my work, you can go to my website and get my book, 660 Pages of Geopolitics, the Red Book, signed copies at jaysanalysis.com.
Now some quick indie comments by Mark Levine.
All right, Donald Trump surging in the polls. The left, they're starting to panic. The liberal group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics, filed a lawsuit today in a desperate attempt to block Trump from appearing on the primary ballot in Colorado, claiming, of course, that he supported the insurrection. He hasn't even been charged with that and therefore should be constitutionally barred from running for office. Okay, here to react to that. And by the way, I finally got my copy of the brand new book. I call him the Great One. Mark Levin, The Democratic Party Hates America. We will have the first interview with Mark on radio and TV. I'm looking forward to it. He also hosts the successful top-rated show on the weekend, Life, Liberty, Levin. Great One. How are me? Thank me. How are you?
I am great. I am great. Wonderful audience here. Let me jump right in. First of all, Sean, on this indictment, the ruse is obvious. I think you're close to it, which is indict him on the gun charge. He may actually get off with this diversion, but get off or not, it's the one charge they can bring that if they have a trial, they won't bring in Papa Bear. If he's indicted on a tax issue, if he's indicted on FARA, you could bring Biden in as a co-conspirator. You can bring him in other ways. You can open up an entire line of questioning involving Joe Biden. On the gun matter, it's very narrow. It's very compartmentalized, so it does not affect Joe Biden directly. So that's the ruse that's taking place here. That's number one. Now, on this 14th Amendment, you have to be the dumbest moron on the face of the earth to be proposing this. You got two knucklehead professors who took 125 pages to tell us that something's in this section that's not in the section. You got a washed-up federal judge here who hates Trump going on TV doing the same thing. You've got these Democrats, who I thought they hated the Constitution because it was written by white supremacists and so forth and so on, but then they cite the Constitution. Let's dig into this. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Anybody who can find the word president other than president electors, I will give you $1,000. No, I'll give you $10,000. It's not in there. They mentioned senators, congressmen, governors, state legislators, state judges, civilians, military personnel, president, vice president, electors. But somehow the most powerful person in the country is left out of that list. Well, he must have been included in this phrase, and an officer of the United States. Now, what they meant by an officer of the United States was some county commissioner in South Carolina. They didn't mean the president of the United States. Now, do you think a Congress after the Civil War believed in states' rights, where they actually thought one state or a handful of states, whether they're legislatures or a secretary of state or an attorney general of that state, would have the power to deny a presidential candidate a ballot position? Can you imagine when they were attacking these states, we still had military occupation in several of these states, that they would give that kind of authority? They never gave that kind of authority. How do we know? Because there's nothing that says they did. So we have these phony originalists who are now activists. We have these activists who are always phony activists who are saying that that's what was meant. Now, what do we mean by insurrection or sedition? Well, we know what they meant when they passed the 14th Amendment and ratified it in 1868. You know what they meant, Sean? The Civil War. That's what they meant. Anyone who engaged in, participated in, gave aid and comfort to the Civil War. They were the ones who were banned from holding public office. They didn't mean for this to apply after the last Confederate died. There's no evidence that they did. And of course they didn't.